This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, February 11th, 2022. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, how artificial intelligence is being used to privatize education, the seven human rights instruments used by international labour, the Labour Start report about union events and singing.
She's a
This is Radio Labour. The Global Union for Teachers, Education International, is warning that the use of artificial intelligence in schools may lead to loss of privacy for students and minimizing the role of teachers. EI represents more than 30 million teachers and other education workers in 172 countries. It released a report outlining concerns that huge education companies will collect massive amounts of data on students and replace teachers with computer programs. I talked to one of the authors of the report about EI's concerns. Anna Hogan is a lecturer at the University of Queensland in Australia. I asked her about the activities of Pearson, one of the education corporations using artificial intelligence in education.
Pearson's one of the world's largest education companies, and it's moved from being this textbook supplier to become this really mainstream provider of all sorts of education products and services. So things like curriculum materials, assessment, online learning programs, teacher professional development, and the list goes on. And what Pearson's doing, or their strategy, is really moving into that development of the digital learning aspects of their business. And how they're doing that is working towards personalized learning programs that start to integrate artificial intelligence. So personalized learning is where students sit at their computer and they learn through an algorithm which dictates what they need to learn. So you can think of it a little bit like a Siri or Alexa becoming your new school teacher. And the way that companies like Pearson develop these programs, it requires a huge amount of data. They need to understand how students learn to be able to program an algorithm that can essentially teach students what they need to know and in a way that's best for that particular individual. So to get to your question about why we're concerned about this type of data privatization, and there's quite a few issues here. So the first one's around privacy. So in terms of how student data is collected and what types of data are collected. And then this links to the issues of consent. So often users don't have a knowledge or understanding that their data is being collected or in the way that it is used. So for example, Pearson will collect data from users interacting with its products and services in responses to their exercises, assignments, coursework, instructor comments, the activities they've completed. While these are all de-identified and aggregated to analyze how Pearson services are used, and then going into their education research and supporting the strategic development of its products and services. But in the report, we basically suggest that then this leads to issues of transparency, as consent is not always explicitly sought. And then there's also issues around data ownership and data responsibility, as Pearson suggests they're only stewards of student data, and it's actually owned by its institutional customers, which then leads to this idea that, I suppose, around data openness, because if schools own the data or students own the data and Pearson owns the products that are being produced and sold from the data, and essentially the knowledge is being locked up in corporate silos, meaning that the benefit for learners and society more broadly is not realised. So this is what we call the privatisation of the data and the data infrastructure. So if Pearson was to open up and share their knowledge of their algorithms and what they're learning from this data, then potentially the social benefits for all of society in terms of student knowledge and understanding would be greatly enhanced. And I suppose the last thing to sort of raise in terms of the concern is about the ethics of these programs themselves. So we know that personalized learning uses algorithms to predict customers' capabilities. And these predictions basically allow students to go to next types, or it basically grants or withholds their access to different types of learning opportunities. So in a way, students are being taught through these predicted actions, and it's not really allowing them the opportunity to surprise us as they often do in our traditional classrooms. I think the point of personalized learning is that this happens on computers, and it very much lessens the reliance of brick and mortar schools and professional teachers.
Human rights that labor has been supporting for years are under severe attack all around the world. C. Marie Ainsborough has a report.
As the respect for human rights around the world is seeming to deteriorate, unions are fighting back. For example, Public Services International, the PSI, has published a booklet entitled A Practical Guide to Trade Union Action, International Human Rights Instruments. The PSI is the global union federation which represents public sector workers at the world level. It has more than 30 million members in 154 countries. It released a video describing its human rights booklet.
PSI innovates once again with our launch of the Practical Guide to Union Action, International Instruments for the Defense of Human Rights, a guide to strengthen organized actions at the local, national, and global level. With this guide, we highlight 7 distinct instruments. Starting with the Universal System of Human Rights of the United Nations. Based on the Universal Human Rights Declaration and on international human rights treaties adopted by the United Nations, the Universal System is composed of conventional and non-conventional mechanisms created to monitor compliance with international obligations. Another instrument is the Monitoring System for the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development. Approved by the United Nations in 2015, Agenda 2030 defines 17 objectives for sustainable development, the SDGs, including specific objectives on work. All of the SDGs contain specific goals and measures that can be monitored by trade unions. Through the Union Cooperation Network for Development of the International Trade Union Confederation, unions are involved in the 2030 agenda process, monitoring compliance, including, for example, by publishing parallel union reports. Next, the System for the Promotion and Implementation of the Organization for Cooperation and Economic Development, the OECDs. Guidelines for Multinational Enterprises. The Guidelines for Multinational Enterprises adopted by the OECD are recommendations made by governments about the conduct of multinational companies in all of their activities and operations, wherever they occur, including throughout global value or production chains. In cases where violations of the recommendations occur, trade unions can register and follow up on formal complaints with national contact points. The fourth instrument, Global Framework Agreements. GFAs are agreements negotiated between global unions and multinational companies with the objective of recognizing and guaranteeing workers' rights globally, throughout production chains. GFAs often apply to suppliers and subcontractors, as well as the company that has signed the agreement. Labor chapters in free trade agreements provide a set of mechanisms whereby the signatory parties, in this case governments, recognize their commitment to guaranteeing minimum labor standards as defined and agreed to at the ILO. Violations of these standards can lead to the creation of arbitration panels, which may ultimately result in the suspension of benefits seated in the free trade agreement itself. Labor safeguards of the multilateral development banks. International trade union action resulted in the creation of mechanisms and compliant procedures to guarantee respect for and protection of fundamental labor standards at the international finance institutions, banks that loan billions to governments and companies to finance investment projects. Lastly, but no less importantly, the International Criminal System for Crimes Against Humanity and Genocide. Crimes against humanity and genocide are understood in the international community to be serious aberrations that should be reported and denounced at any time.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top stories section included links to coverage of the increasingly dangerous role played by journalists around the world as the International Federation of Journalists announced that last year, 47 media workers were killed on the job. Almost as bad was the news that the murderers are, in most cases, free and will remain so as they enjoy impunity from prosecution. Another top story related to journalism was the ongoing attack on the media in Hong Kong. The International Federation of Journalists now describes the situation for media workers there as dire. We also carried news from Canada, where trucking unions made clear that the blockades there have little or nothing to do with drivers or their industry. From Ghana, where the uni strike finished its fifth week, effectively shutting down all universities in that country. And from Slovenia, where healthcare workers won what they call a life-changing wage increase after 18 months of organizing. For our Working Women page, our volunteers found a story detailing why nurses, most of them women, in New Zealand are spending a large proportion of their income buying their own personal protective equipment, how construction unions around the world are preparing for International Women's Day, and several stories about the struggles and strikes being organized by rural public health workers, every last one of them women, across India. A small sample of the stories appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week includes reaction to the workplace murder of a nurse in South Africa and the horrendous working conditions endured by Nepali migrant workers at a factory in Malaysia that made personal protective equipment for customers in Canada and in Europe. We also had items about the ways in which Brazilian women are more often blamed for construction site accidents than men, and demands for a criminal investigation into the deaths of healthcare workers in the United Kingdom who had been provided with inadequate personal protective equipment during the pandemic, or with none at all. Our photo of the week is of Mexican auto workers who were celebrating their victory when the results of their union representation vote were announced. The workers won an important victory with the support of their U.S.ian and Canadian co-workers. Check out our Mexico page for a huge amount of news and analyses on what this vote means for the future of the movement in that country. LaborStart hosts online solidarity actions at the request of unions around the world. This week, we'd like to highlight an urgent appeal for online solidarity with the 8 workers imprisoned for leading a legal strike at a Cambodian casino. Join over 12,000 other workers around the world in sending your solidarity by joining our online action. In just a few seconds, you can do your part in this struggle by sending a solidarity message. Look for details of this and other campaigns on our site. This is Derek Blackadder from LaborStart reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is Union Nation with She's a Rebel Girl. That's it, labor news you can use. You can listen to our daily newscasts and features at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Belanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.